Well, good morning to you. Craig introduced me, my name is Ron Bershauer, and Kathy Stand, would you just, my wife Kathy. I'm a longtime member of what was First Presbyterian Church of Wenatchee. We were PCUSA, like this church was, and we're now longtime members of Saddle Rock EPC. I think what's important for you to know about us, you've got our bio, which is how many kids we have, and the fact that I've been a worker man my whole life. I've been in the auto parts business, and so I've been a businessman and raised children like most of you. So that's important from a bio standpoint. I'm not a theologian, though I love the word. But what should you know about us? Kathy grew up in Brewster, in the log church, community church, self-governing church, okay? I grew up in Ephrata, Disciples of Christ Church, also pretty much a congregational church, self-governing, and that's what I was used to. So that's kind of the background I come from, that a church makes it based on the church itself. That there's no one other than God that keeps rural churches alive, because you're on your own, right? And that's what I'm used to. So we came to Wenatchee in 1980, and we began church shopping. And we felt very much at home at the Presbyterian Church. The theology and what the Presbyterian Church believes in was very comfortable to us, okay? A democratic form of government. We also fell in love with the organization of the church, and Kathy has served as much as I have as the moderator of the deacons when I chose the path of being an elder and committee chairman. Kathy moderated the deacons, and so we liked the government of the Presbyterian Church. Though our churches are 70 miles apart, I'm sure that the impact of the pandemic and the divisive nature of our society right now, I'm sure that it's impacted you in similar ways. I don't know that anyone has been able to avoid this, what I refuse to call new normal. This, ladies and gentlemen, is not the new normal. There will be brighter days. Saddle Rock, like Roslyn, is currently without a permanent teaching elder. And so we're going through a similar process of finding our way through a transitional pastor, through pulpit supply. And I must tell you, this feels good to me. I love your church. I must tell you, I didn't know that it had been rebuilt. This is the way I would have rebuilt a church. It's beautiful. It's effective. It's not over the top. It's here to serve, and I like everything that was done in this church. By the way, I like the men's restroom. it's an old structure, and so I thank you for saving this structure, because I'm sure it wasn't easy, but we feel good to be here. So, well, I chose 2 Corinthians chapter 8, 1 to 2, and you can kind of be looking for that. Craig read that for me. I'm going to read that for you in the way I like to read Scripture, and that is, we're going to stop a little bit, because there's some things in 2 Corinthians 8 that, to me, if you read them closely, just aren't what we normally see in society. Well, certainly the Corinthians faced some of the same challenges that we do here. They lived in a culture that did not appreciate their love of Jesus Christ. Okay, so they fought through that just like we do. So I've told you kind of who I am in terms of my background, but I got to tell you that I need to share with you the mindset, my mindset of what I'm talking about to you today, okay? Because I really am talking to you about how the pandemic, I'm not going to tell you how it's impacted the world. I'm going to tell you how it impacted me, okay? So I recently retired, but at the time the pandemic hit and we went to shelter in place, I was working. I was busy. I was busy every day. And so that when it was announced that people of my age group needed to stay away from the workplace, I worked from home and I liked technology. And it was kind of okay. Shelter in place. I got to spend time with my wife. I get up very early in the morning, and I would start working at 6 or 6:30, and then in the whole middle of the day, I worked in the yard. Ran a few errands. This wasn't bad, and I had this all figured out. This was going to last about a month and a half. And we literally, didn't we, honey? We went to work on our yard projects like we had 45 days to get it done. It just wasn't that bad a deal. But then it went on and it went on and it went on, and we find ourselves that too. So the second thing that the pandemic did for me is I put on 20 pounds. Okay, they call it COVID pounds, okay? Well, I'm not enjoying putting that on because I had worked so hard to keep that off my whole life. I really like to eat. I really like to eat. But I worked out regularly in a gym, and that allowed me the extra calories that I could eat the way I wanted to eat, but then I didn't have a gym. See, I wasn't allowed in a gym, and I have no discipline whatsoever. Other than if I can go to a gym and have to see other people. That's the only discipline I have. So Kathy started walking, and she invited me to walk with her, and our daughter would walk with us. And that lasted for me about, did it even last 2 weeks? Because you know what? It was always too hot for me, too cold for me, too windy for me, too dusty for me. And so my COVID 20 pounds has stayed until just recently, where I'm starting to figure myself back out again. Our church, and I'm going to be careful with this, wasn't allowed to meet. You're going to hear me talk about this in just a second. That's the way I would have presented this in May. Our church wasn't allowed to meet. We weren't allowed to worship. That's how, if you talked to me in May, that's what you'd have got from me, is that we weren't allowed to worship, okay? And so we're kind of got some good techie people in our church, and so we moved our whole service, not just the sermon, but the whole service, just what I enjoyed here today. You've just got marvelous musicians. I don't know you personally, but the piano was beautiful and the violin is beautiful, and so you're very fortunate to have that. But we have that too at Saddle Rock. And so all of that is online, starting from just what, as Craig did, the service. You have a chance to see the whole service. So when this got started, I was all in. We, Kathy and I, and our daughter sometimes would join us. We would watch the service at the exact time we used to worship corporately, 8:30 in the morning. And though we didn't dress up, we might have been in our pajamas. At the beginning, we'd even stand up in our living room and sing. And we were engaged in the word, and we were engaged in the prayers of the people, and we worshiped, okay? So the exercise thing didn't last very long. And then for me, the worship part started to fail on me. Because I figured out in my head, I didn't have to watch the service at 8:30. I could watch it whenever I wanted. I could go out and ride my bike. I could do yard work. I could work on my car. And I could watch it whenever I wanted. But we would still watch it together at some time. Well, then that went away to where we kind of all would watch the service. And then, you know, on your phone, when you're watching the service, you can hit that little dot and you can go right by what Craig did this morning. And you can go right by the music if it's not a song that you really like. And then you can just listen to the sermon. So that's where I found myself. But I'm more concerned this morning about your confession that you chose, because it was chosen for this sermon. It says, "Lord, I have sinned times without number and been guilty of pride and unbelief and of neglect to seek you in my daily life. When I was busy working, I always sat down before I went to work and had a devotional. So how is it that when I'm home with all this extra time, I didn't? And in fact, on August 17th, when I finally woke up to what was going on, I opened up my devotional, which is Hope for Every Day by Billy Graham. Hope. On August 17th, I opened that devotional, and the marker was in July 17th. I never usually miss that time in the morning, for whether it be 10 minutes or 12 minutes. Sometimes it's longer. I don't want to give you the impression that that this was an hours-long process, but I always was in a time of devotion. And suddenly, I had all this time, and I was not doing that. So you notice that in this prayer confession, been guilty of pride and unbelief and of neglect to seek you in my daily life. I should say shame on you for throwing this back in my face again, but I'll thank you because I need it thrown back in my face every day. So that's where I was at. Now let's talk about this worship thing, because this is important as we talk today too. So in May, I would have told you that Governor Inslee, who's not my number one guy, okay, that he prevented me from worship. I know that's not true. I just told you what happened to my worship routine. I will guarantee you, Jay Inslee is not in my home on a Sunday morning. So he was not preventing me from worshiping. I was preventing me from worshiping. And all the things that went along with my attitude, and so I, around August 17th, I confessed to God, and now I confess to you that I blame my attitude and my actions during this pandemic on everyone and everything except myself. Because I know full well that it's possible for a person to experience meaningful worship on the top of a mountain or in a foxhole when you're fighting for this country, in a foreign country, in a city that is not friendly to the Christian faith. We all know that you can have meaningful worship just about anywhere. Though I'm not happy with some of the edicts of our government, and I'm not a government kind of guy, I know where this sin lies. So, I wrap that all up that on August 17th, I realized I was stuck. I was stuck because my routine was not getting to change. We couldn't travel, we couldn't move, we were stuck at home, okay? That working in the yard lost its luster after 45 days. Not being able to go out for dinner, not being able to go to church, not being able to visit friends, not being able to get in our, we're road trip people, not being able to take road trips. So we felt, I felt stuck. This is the other part of this that if you looked at the title of my sermon, and we are going to get to the word here, I will assure you, we will get there. But I, like many of you, have been on a commercial airliner when the pilot has come on the intercom and said, "This is your pilot speaking. Flight operations has put us in a holding pattern." So you're sitting in your seat in a commercial airliner and you get that message, and it's, I'm sure, happened to most all of you, and it's usually very short. And so you go on and you continue to read your book, and then suddenly the pilot says, "Okay, we've now been cleared to land." But I do remember one terrible instance that Kathy and I were flying to Houston with thunderclouds and lightning literally close to striking the airplane when the pilot said, "We cannot land in Houston. We've been placed in a holding pattern." And so what you as a as someone on that plane, you can wring your hands and you can pray and you can worry, but you are not in control at all. Now, let me contrast that for you for what's going on in the cockpit. The people in the cockpit are not sitting in their seat, wringing their hands and worrying and having anxiety. They're calculating fuel consumption. They're trying to find another place to land. They are interacting with flight operations to try to find a way out of danger. So on August 17th, I said to myself, I don't want to be the person sitting in the seat of the plane. I want to be more like the people in the cockpit. In control, God is control, but I'm working through this. I'm developing a plan. I'm working my way out of this. And that was the realization that I came to. And I will tell you, I'm getting there. I'm not there. So some things I have to share with you today is how I got unstuck and how I got out of this, or how I'm working my way out of this holding pattern. So let's take a look at 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 1 through 12. And let me read that for you, and let me tell you what strikes me about this passage. "We want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. For in severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity." Those words don't go together in a sentence. Their joy and their extreme poverty overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. What is so joyous about extreme poverty is what you should be seeing in this. "For they gave according to their means, and as I can testify, beyond their means." But here's the important part of that sentence: "of their own accord." So Paul wasn't twisting their arms. They had an abundance of joy in spite of their afflictions, in spite of their extreme poverty, and they were giving beyond their means of their own accord, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the release of the saints. So again, Paul wasn't twisting the arm. They were asking how they could help. And this not as we expected. Who would expect that? But they gave themselves first to the Lord, and then by the will of God to us. Accordingly, we urge Titus that as he had started, so he should complete among you this act of grace. But as you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in all earnestness, and in our love for you, see that you excel in this act of grace also. Now, I didn't make this up that Paul wasn't twisting their arms. What does it say in 8? I say this not as a command, but to prove by the earnestness of others that your love also is genuine. Now, you understand the context here. He's not talking to the Macedonians. He's talking to the Corinthians, and he's using the Macedonians as who he wants them to parallel. He wants them to see this joy and earnestness of the Macedonians. And so he's putting them up. And so he is saying, I say this not as a command. Now he's talking to the Corinthians. I'm not commanding you to give to the mother church in Jerusalem, but I want you to take a look at what is going on in Macedonia and the great joy that they are experiencing. I say this not as a command, but to prove by the earnestness of others, the Macedonians, that your love also is genuine. For you know the grace of Jesus Christ, and though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that you by his poverty might become rich. Now, listen to this. In 10, and in this matter I give my judgment. The great apostle Paul, you know, if he was preaching here today and he said, and now I give you my judgment. If you weren't listening to anything else, you'd probably perk your ears. And he says, this benefits you. This giving, this sacrificial giving, he didn't say it benefited the church. He said it benefits you, who a year ago started not only to do this work, but also to desire to do it. So now finish doing it well, so that your readiness in desiring it may be matched by your completing it out of what you have. For if the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. You're not hearing a sermon today about your financial giving. That's not what where we're going today. But this verse encapsulates a lot of what we Presbyterians believe about giving financially, that we give according to what we have. Praise Jesus. Praise Jesus that everyone was not to give the same. Who could meet that? And that Jesus cared more about your attitude of giving than he did about what you gave. So it is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. I'm just pointing out that this scripture that I'm using today, I'm not using it. I don't think I came here to raise $1 million for Saddle Rock. So I'm not really giving you a sermon on stewardship today. Okay? So we're going to look a little closer at this passage. So now let me give you a little more context. I've introduced you again to the Macedonians, what the Corinthians were up against, that Paul is writing to the Corinthians. Paul, and I didn't know this till I did some research on this, Paul actually was actively seeking financial help for the Jerusalem church for 10 years. To me, that's something in itself. In our current society, we have a building campaign or something, and we're disappointed if we can't complete it in 3 years, right? So he was actively trying to support the early Christian church in Jerusalem for 10 years. So here he reminds the Corinthians of their duty, and he urges them to act generously. So I want to tell you the 5 arguments that Paul makes in this. Now, you're all good Presbyterians. See, I'm a worker man. I'm a layman. I'm not a preacher. Preachers always have 3, right? They always have 3 things they're going to tell you. Well, it takes me 5 to get done what preachers get done in 3. So here's the 5 arguments. He cites the example of others. We've already talked about that. He tells them how generous the Macedonian churches had been. They were poor and in trouble, but they gave all they had, far more than anyone could have expected. So, first of all, he puts up someone else to them as an illustration for them. You know, it's not always the most wealthy that are the best givers, and certainly not in the eyes of Jesus. As the common saying says, it's the poor who help the poor because they know what poverty is like. So here's a group that he's showing them, the Macedonians, that have nothing, extreme poverty, and yet they gave beyond their means and they asked if they could give. Okay, that's the first argument that he presents to the Corinthians. The second one, he cites the example of Jesus Christ. Paul knew that the sacrifice of Jesus did not begin on the cross. Have you considered that? In fact, the sacrifice of his humble birth was not the beginning of his sacrifice. It actually was when he was in heaven. And when he agreed to come to earth with a humble birth and ultimately die on a cross, that was the beginning. And so Paul simply says to the Corinthians, with that tremendous example of generosity before you, the generosity of Jesus Christ, how can you hold back? Argument 1, look at the Macedonians. If you don't want to look at the Macedonians, look at Jesus Christ. Thirdly, he cites their own past record. The Corinthians, they have been foremost in everything. You know, that's the thing about the Corinthians. They were learned. They did incredible things for their time in science and many other areas. They had high standards. Well, if men were only true to their own highest standards, if we all lived at our best, what a difference it would be. I've just confessed to you, I spent several months through this pandemic not living my best. So 4, Paul stresses the necessity of putting fine ideals into fine action. The Corinthians had been first in many things, and they wanted also to be known for being first in their support of the Jerusalem church. That's how they saw themselves. That's what they wanted to be. But a feeling, which remains only a feeling, a pity, which remains only a pity in your heart, a fine desire that never turns into a fine deed is a sadly ineffective and frustrating thing. The tragedy of life is often this. We have high impulses, but we fail to turn high impulses into action. And finally, I think the 5th argument that he makes here is he reminds them that life has a strange way of evening things up. Far more often than not, we find that what is measured to us, far more than often, we find that it is measured to us with the same measure that we measure to others. Life has a way of repaying bounty with bounty and a sparing spirit with a sparing spirit. So, I propose to you today that I'm giving you this as background, not the way this is normally preached in a church. This passage would normally be preached on Stewardship Sunday. That is not what I see in this passage. And so why is it that I say that this passage is a way out of being stuck? How is it that it is a way out of being in a holding pattern, or literally to be controlled by this pandemic? Because that's the feeling I didn't like, is that helplessness of not having any control over yourself. So let's just talk about a few things that I see in this passage. I see this thing that we, if we are going to get our minds off of ourselves, and that's what I felt for myself during this time, was I became very self-centered, very much concerned about what was going on in my life. And that's why I was judgmental of everybody outside myself. But I must tell you, I don't know how much longer this is going to go on, but we, Kathy and I, have not paid a huge price, not compared to what I see others have. Our business didn't fail, and I don't see that it is going to fail. Now I'm starting to see more and more people that are in terrible financial straits. And I'm going to tell you, folks, as a businessman, this domino has only begun. In our city of Wenatchee, two restaurants closed for good. They're not name brand restaurants. They're not the Applebee's and the Red Robins. They're the 59er Diner. They're Mom's Cafe. They're done. They're closed. And we're going to start to see businesses fail. And they won't be back. And so I realize now that the pandemic, though it's been rough on me, especially emotionally, that I haven't paid the price that others have paid. And that's what I confess to you today, and I confess to God. I haven't had, up to this point, the compassion, nor was I seeking ways that I could help. That in itself is how you're going to get out of this pandemic mode, this being stuck, this being in a holding pattern, is when you start to seek ways that you can help someone else. When you get your mind off you and get it back on helping people, but not just helping people in the name of Christ. That's the difference. That's the difference. Helping people in the name of Christ. Then Christ will lead you out of this feeling. So, here's what you can do. People right now need encouragement more than they have ever needed encouragement. But what I hear from myself and from others is, but we can't do anything. We can't do anything. We can't go visit people. You know, we can't engage with people. We can't go to their home. We can't. What are we going to do? This week, find someone to encourage. It shouldn't be hard. Find someone that you can encourage. And then after you encourage them, affirm them to someone else. Now, here's what that looks like. You know someone that needs encouragement. Maybe a church leader. Send them an email. Pick up the phone. Call them. Don't give them your opinion. Just tell them you're praying for them, you appreciate them, and you know that it's hard work. The second part of that is then affirm that person to someone else. Say, you know, Ben has been a faithful leader within this church. I hope there's no Ben. No Bens? Okay. And so you encourage Ben, but then go to Susan and say, you know what? I recognize what a faithful leader, giver, server Ben is. Okay? There's no restrictions on that. The governor's not put any restrictions on your use of email or your use of the telephone, and your words can be cool water because you don't know how they're feeling. You don't know where they're at. So number one, do that. Do it often. Don't just do it today. Do it every day. You will feel blessed, and you will have blessed the socks off the person that you take the time to do this. I received, while I was developing this text, I received an email from a gal who is such a strong global missions gal. She's a doctor, and they go on numerous medical missions, and this is killing them because they can't go. They so desperately want to go back to India. They want to go back to Guatemala, but their Americans aren't allowed in. So she wrote to Kathy and I and just thanked us for this small gift that we gave. She put out an urgent call that a group in Nepal were using their ministry money to feed people on the street. So many of us did what we could do. And she took the time to write a letter. It was wonderful. Okay. Secondly, seek out opportunity to serve others and connect with a member of the church body. Now, the virus is limiting our personal contact, but again, now, a note of encouragement or affirmation might be to anybody in the community. It might be your neighbor who doesn't attend church. It might be the road worker that you know. It might be the carpenter that's working down the street. But I'm asking you to seek out an opportunity to encourage somebody within this church body. Again, a personal note, an email, a phone call. I suffered from being self-centered. I want to be more Christ-centered. That's what God has told me. Less, if you want to get out of this, be less self-centered and focus more on me, be more Christ-centered. The Bible states that we are to wait on the Lord. My wife contends, I've heard her say this so many times, that waiting on the Lord is not a passive response. That passage doesn't mean sit in your home, do nothing, and wait for the Lord to solve all this. It is an active response of waiting on the Lord by being obedient to the Lord and by seeking opportunities that you can serve in His name. God knows ways you can serve. You pray the prayer in your morning devotion, God, help me find a way I can help. Be careful what you're praying for, because you're going to get plenty, okay? As was the case of the Macedonians, who gave generously financially, that's something else we can do. We can be sure that the order of the church is taken care of by continuing our ties, but also looking out at those parachurch organizations that are in a world of hurt right now, because they don't have their normal revenue streams coming in. As I work with parachurch organizations, soup kitchens, service organizations that serve in the name of Jesus Christ, Young Life, I was recently in an event with Young Life. They've lost a lot of their normal streams of revenue. They can't have golf tournaments, and they can't have special events and functions to raise money. So reach out to those. Supporting them financially is wonderful, but pick up the phone and call their director and say, I want to help support you financially because I believe in what you do. What else can I do? Is there something else that I can do? Because this is a case, folks, where this is not, you're not going to get out of these doldrums by serving when you're asked. You're going to need to ask to serve. That's what the Macedonians did, you remember? And they did it on their own accord, and they asked if they could give. Paul didn't expect him to give because he knew they were in affliction and extreme poverty. They asked if they could give. So that's what I contend today. The Bible speaks often of supporting the widows, the orphans, and feeding the poor. So the other thing I contend to you is we got to be as a church innovative, because we can't do things the way we've always done them in the past. I would like to give you the illustration of our group in Wenatchee called the Lighthouse Ministry. They serve the homeless. The first thing the city said was, you can't feed the homeless. You can't do it. Why? Because they served food in a buffet method, right? They filled people's plates and they handed them plates and there was lots of contact, and homeless people don't have masks. And many of them won't wear them if they're given to them. So the Lighthouse Ministries didn't go sit on the bench. They innovatively came up with the idea of making sack lunches. Thousands of sack lunches that they could literally leave in boxes outside the facility, and people could come and get those sacks. That's innovation. That's ways of saying, I know I need to help, and my normal way of doing it isn't working. I'm going to find a way that I can do that. We have a whole new generation right now of shut-ins. Kathy was moderator of the deacons. One of their number one objectives, missions, was to reach out to the shut-ins in the church. But that primarily has always been those in nursing homes. But we got a whole new generation of shut-ins. You know them. They're not here today. They're not sitting in these seats because they're shut in because of fear. They've got heart conditions. They've got other things where they know that they have to remain isolated. So we've got this whole new generation right now, and I hope that ends, of shut-ins. And so seek ways that you can reach them. Here's an idea that we came up with. I didn't do this. Okay? I'm not even sure what this is, but my grandson did it. And my other grandson did this. And he said, love, Ben. Age 8. So we're sending these kind of things to shut-ins. And they're going to end up on refrigerators. Could be the only contact have all week. So, we're leaving you with that idea. You've got grandchildren. You've got children. Take some of their drawings that you enjoy so much. You know, it doesn't have to say, "Dear Iris, love Ben." It just says, "Hello, love Ben, age 8. The last area that I'd like you to consider to seek out is young families that are trying to deal with this school thing. It just pains me to watch my son and my daughters deal with this, trying to work and trying to teach their children, and they are just, every day for them, their life is just turned upside down, okay? And so they are ones that need that encouragement. If you've got a young family that's in your neighborhood, someone that is in the church, I don't know if you know the young family well, I'm sure they would accept a dinner. I'm sure they would accept some pizzas showing up one night, right? But what I think they really need to hear is, we know what you're going through, or at least we think we know, and we know it's tough. And then again, please, no opinions, no suggestions, just, and we think you're doing a great job. So that's how I think that 2 Corinthians 8, 1 to 12 is a message that we all need to hear during this pandemic, because we need to get out of our holding pattern, and we need to get our eyes off of ourselves. I need to get my eyes off of the governor, and I need to put my eyes on Christ, and I need to seek ways to serve him. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm getting out of this. Unfortunately for me, I prayed, "Lord, show me some ways to help." And he just recently put me on this thing called the ministerial committee. God bless you, Jesus. That's not my normal place to serve. But you pray the prayer, and then the next day you get the phone call, and you have to put those two together and say, "Then, Lord, I will do whatever you call me to do if you help me." Because he'll have to help me a lot. So, with that, can I pray and pray the benediction? No, we have a song in between, don't we? So that's okay. We'll have a benediction also. But let's pray together. Jesus, I thank you for this church. I thank you for this Roslyn church. I thank you for the history of this church, their love for you, their love for the community, their steadfastness, their never say never, never say die attitude to be a church and to be a witness in Roslyn. Lord, I pray for all of us that we might think more of others than ourselves. Jesus, show us ways to serve. We ask you today in your name, Jesus, show us ways that we can serve. Lord, make us encouragers and not pot stirrers. Make us people of peace and not of war. Make our words like cool water to those that thirst for acceptance. Strengthen this church. Invigorate this church. Give strength to this session, to your administrator, to your leadership, to your deacons. Give an extra measure of strength and innovation. Give them energy. This we ask in your name, Jesus, and only your name. Amen.